Hello and welcome to Shot in the Dark podcast. I'm not with my usual partner today, James Jowsey. He's away recording some CrossFit specific podcasts. I've hopped over into my area of expertise and enjoyment, cycling. I'm very happy to be joined by my good friend, Trolls Winder. Hey, Trolls.
Hey, Phil.
There's not many mountains in Denmark, eh?
No, there's only tiny hills here.
And lots of wind, eh?
Lots of wind. Wind is always the decisive point for the races here in Denmark when we talk about cycling.
So we're talking about, we've hopped straight in, instead of talking about training and other sorts of things and season planning and everything else. We've hopped straight in at the of how we win bike races. And Trolls and I have been having a very interesting discussion about racing in Denmark in comparison to racing other places in the world. The terrain's very flat. It rains a lot, and the wind is very, very strong. So Trolls, you've been racing in a Danish A class and the Danish UCI races for the best part of 10 years, a little bit more.
10 years, yeah.
Yeah. How does the wind play such an important factor in the races? Can you, I know we're going to talk a little bit about how we set the bike up and stuff to that wind, but how is the racing different to, for example, the races down in France or the long mountains there in the heat? What's the fundamental difference there?
Positioning when there is crosswind is really decisive. And here is not so much about the watts per kilo, it's more like the drag per kilo. How much wind do you take in compared to how many watts you can actually push in the pedals. So it's a lot more about teamwork if you need to perform here in Denmark, because on a climb in the south of France you can easily go by yourself if you're the strongest, but here you need to work together to make it to the line. So the wind is crucial, and you need to be really well prepared before the races. Look where the wind direction is coming from, where is the right moment to attack, and of course there's always the different riders and team tactics play in as well. So it's not like climbing. No. Climbing.
You said a couple of quite important things there, which I would like to pick up on. The first one was a little bit of the tactics. What are you thinking? You say you're well prepared before a race, and you know where the side wind's coming. And as I understand it, the Danish races are pretty much always decided by the side wind and who rides them best or most efficiently or has the best support there.
Exactly.
So let's say you're 4 kilometers from the what you've picked out as the decisive side wind section.
Yeah.
That 4 kilometers there, what are you doing as a team or as a rider yourself? What are you thinking? What's the most important thing there? What are you going after? What's the fight there?
The fight is to be in the best position possible together with your teammates.
Okay, and what's the best position possible there then?
Depending on how many you are.
Yeah.
But if there is really a long crosswind section where it's open, and then you want to have the front.
Okay. So all the way at the front or second or third?
Yeah, there you want to be all the way at the front. Okay. Taking the charge. But there's always this surprising aspect in it. So you want to have the whole team together. Everybody needs to know what to do. But still, you don't want the whole peloton to hear when you're talking to your teammates there.
No.
So you also want to have a little bit of the surprise element in there.
Yeah.
If you want to have the perfect crosswind section.
Yeah, okay.
Where everybody just sits at the back and takes it easy, and suddenly you hit the throttle with 5 guys.
So you've got 3 or 4 big teams here in Denmark, and they're all just as smart as you. So you make it sound very easy. that the idea is just to be at the front, agree with your teammates, we're going straight to the front, the crosswind's coming, and when we get into the crosswind, we're going to split everybody with some big watts. But the other three teams, they're making exactly the same plan, because they also do that. So you make it sound very, very easy, but I mean, how intense is that fight? That 4 kilometers. How intense is the fight between the teams there? Is it the strongest man sort of mentally that gets to the front? Is it the how do you win? How do you make sure it's your team at the front? If you've got four teams all fighting for it, it must be chaos.
Yeah, it's always chaos. It's like a war out there. But sometimes you take the front really early. You take maybe the front 10 km before there's crosswind, and you just start turning a little bit, and then people think, oh, now they're going. But then after 5 km, sometimes it's more relaxed, because then they think, oh, they're just turning to catch the breakaway, and suddenly they turn on the gas in the crosswind when it's coming. And other times it's a full on sprint to the corner where there is crosswind. You try to talk together as much as possible if there's another team trying to pass you. And the small roads here, it's not always possible to have two big teams passing each other. So if there's a team coming up on one of your sides, everybody shouts, go to the left. So we block the whole team out, and you just go with the whole team onto the left side of the road so they can't pass you. Of course you can't do it for a lot of case, but if it's decisive, if you're gonna get the front in the crosswind or not, then you can do it for a few case.
So now we have a little some introduction there, a basic understanding of what we want from our riders. And of course you're lucky enough to be riding on a team, but we're working with a lot of guys who are racing in the B class or the C class who don't have a team and they're on their own, and that war is even bigger or harder for those guys, because they need to be prepared. They need to know where the front is, they need to know where the side wind's coming, and they don't have a guy with 10 years experience like yourself to help them. They got to be there themselves. What can they do? Of course we talk about training in the next episode, but what can they do? We talk a lot about the 1%. How can we make? How can we get 1% advantage over our competitors? And in your introduction there, you mentioned something called watts per drag, and we're used to hearing watts per kilo. And what we're finding out, or what we understand, we've understood for some years now, that here at home, as we call it in rainy, windy Denmark, watts per kilo isn't actually quite as important as what we're calling watts per drag. Yeah. Can you go into a little bit more detail about the watts per drag and what the thought is and what our thought process are there?
Yeah, I think here in Denmark, everybody is still talking about watts per kilo. They're sort of like blinded by it.
Yeah.
But it's so tiny hills here, it doesn't mean a lot.
No.
It's more like watts per drag. You want to sit aggressive on the bike so you get as aerodynamic as possible.
Yeah.
And still producing a lot of watts. Because when you need to pull in the crosswind there, it's about how much wind you take in, how much shelter you can get behind you and your teammates. So
and if you're racing alone.
Yeah, and if you're racing alone, you want to go alone in the final, closing gaps. It's always important to be aerodynamic.
Yeah.
You're riding with a high average speed, so the drag is high.
And I mean, a lot of the sort of bike manufacturers, they come into their own, and the wheel manufacturers will come into their own and say, yeah, but you can win 3% here or 1% here with a more aerodynamic wheel set, or a golf ball type wheel set, or an aerodynamic frame, etc. But what we can't run away from, and the statistics we can't get away from, is that 20% of the drag is the bike, and the other 80% is the body on top of the bike.
Yeah, exactly.
So we can buy ourselves some support, and we can use our we have a Danish saying that says we don't ever go down in equipment. Oh. and we shouldn't, of course. But what we do know is if watts per drag in the windy races is more important than watts per kilo, and 80% of that watts per drag is us on the bike, we've got to do a lot with ourselves. So maybe some examples of some professionals that everybody knows that do this well, that sit in the wind well, that control side wind well, and sit nicely. Who should we be looking at? Which of the professionals that is easy to Google, easy to look up, sit nicely?
I think we should look at the people who knows how to ride alone. There's a reason why they know it, is because they're good at it. So a guy like Bradley Wiggins and Fabian Cancellara, they are absolutely expert at having a good position and have a really low drag. A guy who's a bit underdog like Stephen Cummings sits really nicely on the bike as well. He's always in control and he's really good at riding alone for the last few Ks, and always stays seated in the bike. He's normally, you always see him in the back in the drops. He rides in the drops all the time, so it's really, really aerodynamic.
Yeah.
Aggressive front position.
I've got to be a little bit, you know me well enough, I like the nerd side of things, and I've actually, because I knew we were going to be talking a little bit about it, I've actually done a little bit of research, and there's some fantastic reading actually on watts per drag from different sources, on websites and in books, but the more you look into it, the more incredible the statistics are. I mean, you guys are riding at 40, 45 kilometers an hour average, and just taking a pen and putting a pen on the side of your helmet in a heavy wind there at 45 kilometers an hour is 5 to 10 watts in some cases. It's an incredible amount of watts.
Yeah.
And so sitting so high on the bike, it's... for those who would like to go really, really some nerd into it, we use a formula which is F equals CDA. And anyone who's interested in hearing more about that, they can easily write into us and we'd be happy to talk to them or send them some stuff. And it's just incredible watts extra you're pushing or using by 1 centimeter, sitting a centimeter higher, spaces under your handlebars, or the different types of things is, I think the cyclists out there will be surprised how much extra work they have to do, how much 5 watts over 4 hours at 45 kilometers an hour, how much that actually means in the end result, whether it's a top 5 or top 50 performance.
Yeah, and you also have to remember, even just saving energy, doing a long race. Maybe you don't want to ride solo in the final, so maybe you don't stay in the wind so much. But if you have that extra energy by being efficient, not taking as much drag as the other riders, then you just have more in the tank in the finals. And when I analyze my modifiers and compare them to other riders in the field, I almost always have a lower average power, and still I'm in front of them and in the results.
Yeah.
And it just means I have a lot more in the tank in the final, where the race is won or lost. So
I'm hearing you. And I'm also hearing the other guys out there listening to the podcast saying, yeah, we get the point. We need to be aerodynamic.
Yeah.
We understand that. When I set my bike up to be aerodynamic, I feel like potentially I'm locked. There's a lot of the feeling of the watts being locked, where they feel like they can't get the watts out into the pedals because they're the bike is potentially too aggressive. Not that we believe in that, but that's what they will say is that. Yeah. But if I can't produce the watts in that position, then there's no point in me being in that position. What would you say to them, and what's the counter argument to that?
I would say you need to be flexible to sit in a really aggressive position, and you need to do your stretching. There's no easy way of doing it. Some they have it naturally, but a lot of guys, they need to work on it. Otherwise, they will have that feeling of being blocked.
So I mean, it's not a secret that I write your training program, so I know how many hours training you do a week, and it's a lot of training. But how much extra time are you spending on what we call position training a week? How much are you spending just working on how you sit on the bike? Perhaps not so much now, but in the past years, how much effort, if we're talking, I know cyclists like to measure training by hours. So if we're talking about how much hours, what percent of your time a week are you using on sitting nicely on the bike?
And normally I'm doing around 2 strength sessions a week, also working on the position.
Yeah.
Then I do stretching every day.
Yeah.
It doesn't take very long, it's like 10-15 minutes.
Yeah.
But still, 7 days a week makes a big difference.
Yeah,
the strength training, of course, it also helps me keeping that good position on the bike and being strong in the right places and avoiding injuries as well.
I mean,
it's a lot of hours, a week.
I mean, I know. I have the statistics myself, as we both have. How important? I mean, I know you. When you sit on the bike, you the position is very important for you. But you can also. It's very often we'll talk after a race, and I'll ask you how did it go, and you tend to answer actually. I sat really nicely, or I didn't feel like I could find a position. You don't usually say I won or I lost, or and actually, I know, as you said to me on the phone, I sat nicely. When we're drinking coffee together, you'll say I sat nicely. Then I know everything's going quite well, and it's your way of saying I'm in good shape, I'm in good form. But how sensitive is the position? How sensitive is it? I mean. Because a lot of guys have never worked on the position before. A lot of guys listening to this would never have worked on their position and would never have had a focus on it. And of course, they don't know what they're missing.
No.
And 5-6 years ago, when we started first working on your position, you didn't know what you were missing. But now, because you've sat so nicely, we only need to move you 1% away from what you call home. And actually, it's very difficult for you to find your position. How significant has that been for you? How significant is it for you? I know in a stage race, for example, if you're not doing your stretching and getting your massage in the evening, by the third day when you start to be a little bit stiffer because you're working so hard, the position will change. So I think it's also important we talk about that, that people understand the dynamic process in sitting nicely on the bike. It isn't just, we put your saddle there, we put your handlebars there, and then you'll be set for life. Have you got any good examples of when the position is just, you've just lost the position because of stiffness or a crash, for example, is a good one?
It's like you say, if you had tried a really good position, it's really crucial, the feeling of being in control, that I can just activate my glutes, my hamstrings, I can just pedal without feeling any pain, just the breathing is going. I don't feel the legs, I don't feel my thighs, I just feel my hamstrings, my glute, and then I can just continue riding. But a lot of people, they don't think about, now I've got this bike fit and now I don't need to change it. Of course, your body changes and you get stiffer when you do strength training. If you crash, you sit a little bit on one side of the saddle, or your bag is a little bit torn apart. So
yeah.
So of course your position on the bike also change.
Yeah. What about just in the race? I mean, there's the research we're doing now. There's 3 to 4 centimeters difference between people sitting in the peloton versus people in the breakaway.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in the breakaway, sitting completely forward on the saddle, down on the drops, racing there, you're sitting potentially 3 centimeters lower than then you're sitting all the way back on the saddle, relaxing, for want of a better way of saying it, in the peloton.
Yeah.
How do you manage that? Where do you set the bike up after? Because there is 2 completely different setups there.
Yeah. I set the bike up after the race position when you're going really fast, when you're rotated in the hips, rotated forward in the hips, like pressing down and backwards, and not forwards on the pedals. When you're in the drops and you slide naturally forward on the saddle, there you just tend to sit a lot lower, like you say, and maybe when I'm just cruising around in the peloton, I sit better on the saddle, then it feels a little high and everybody say I'm sitting high. But when you're racing full gas there in on the tip of the saddle, then it's there you want the right position,
yeah,
the right height on the saddle. That's where you need the power.
Yeah. I mean, 3 centimeters, it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's really a lot. And I think people are losing a lot of power. When they're suddenly in the final or suddenly having to really race, and it's something we've worked quite hard on. Good. So then I have to ask you a question: who sits badly, Trolls? Who do you look at in the pro peloton and think, oh, we could have some work with him?
Yeah, of course, Chris Froome, but. Everybody says he doesn't sit good on the bike and he doesn't look good on the bike, but it clearly works for him.
Yeah.
And
but is it again? I mean, we're talking very much about watts per drag, but in Chris Froome's world, with the races he goes after, his races are watts per kilo races.
Yeah.
And of course, his position and the way he produces power there is further back on the saddle. Is in a different position perhaps to racing here in Denmark in the ABCD or junior classes there, where the wind plays such a significant factor and the side wind is everything else there. So can we let him get away with that as a fellow Englishman, or do you think again there's room for improvement there? Could we work with could he work on his position and get even more out of the of what he does?
Yeah, I think definitely he could. He could work on his position, and I also think he said that in the press. I don't know if it was last year or going into the winter, he wanted to work on his position, but I haven't really seen him change a lot. But being on a big team and being a climber, he's not in the wind a lot. Maybe the last case on a climb.
Yeah.
So he can sit a bit more upright, and everybody's talking about his breathing. That's why he's looking down at his stem to get a better breathing. And
yeah.
So he can have his handlebars a bit higher than if he wants to go solo in a flat race.
Solo in Aalborg.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just looking at some statistics there of watts per kilo versus watts per drag. We're actually seeing, we have the conversation often of based on the weight of the rider. There's that tradition of in the cycling world of being as light as possible, and we're hearing some crazy stories in some of the professional guys who aren't losing weight, just losing pure muscle mass, and losing muscle mass is in no way helpful. Losing a kilo's muscle mass just makes you ride slower. There's nothing to win from that. And what we're finding here at home is actually putting on. We always have that 1 to 3. You know, if a kilo's muscle mass is going to come with 3 to 5, 6 watts is worth putting the muscle mass on. And if and if I can't, if it's not going to produce more than that, then I won't do it. And vice versa, I'm going to lose a kilo. I can't lose more than 5 watts. But actually what we're seeing is actually weighing a couple of kilos more and having a better drag and having a better power output in relationship to injuries, in relationship to feeling good, in relationship to being sick, a lot of cyclists, because potentially are not eating well enough because they have this watts per kilo. So there's also, for me, from a coaching perspective, there's also a lot to win of thinking watts per drag. And I think a lot of the traditional training in cycling is filtered down from the professionals who are riding in the mountains. A lot of the thought processes, you know, when you hear under 19 riders that or C-class riders talking about, yeah, but it's all about watts per kilo and I need to lose some weight, and actually they're going out and racing in 15, 20 meters per second wind. Mm. They've really got the focus on the wrong things. Yeah. They're really using a lot of mental energy on something that actually is working against them. And all the statistics we can find and all the analysis we've done is actually weighing a kilo to 2 kilos more here in the wind is actually beneficial. I know you've been through a strength training process. Maybe we're running out of time. Maybe you should just finish off by talking a little bit about the types of stretching and the types of strength training you're doing, and making sure you're aerodynamic and making sure you're strong enough and having a kilo more or two with more power.
Yeah, the sort of stuff I'm doing is a lot of squats, a lot of lunges, started doing some heavy cleans and some really heavy squats as well the last few years, and it does give it a few kilos more of muscle, but it's definitely faster also when you go. You have more power. You're a lot more explosive on the bike. So all these small accelerations all the time, it's just easier.
I mean, that's the point. We've analysed cycling, and race cycling in Denmark is closer to a football match than it is Tour de France. You know, football match is sprint, stop, and that aggressiveness and that war you talked about earlier, that's racing in Denmark. And that constant long 30, 40 minute constant effort that you have in the mountains, we just don't have it here in the races at home. And as I say, it's closer to football than it is to what we see on the telly. And unfortunately, people, not that this is a training podcast, but we'll do that another day, people are still training like the professionals do. And unfortunately, there's no relevance to that. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. And coffee.
Yeah. What time is it?
Yeah, it's coffee time. So we're going to grab a shot in the dark. And Trolls is going to be joining us for several more podcasts where we're going to be talking about racing and training and performance in the cycling world. Yeah. Thanks for your time, Trolls.
You're welcome.